Senate will come to order, please. The Senate will come to order for the 57th legislative day. Will members please vote to signify their presence in the chambers.
The roll shows 14 members present this morning. Senator Curtula is excused from the call of the Senate.
There's a significant number, sufficient number to establish a quorum this morning. This morning's chaplain, the Senator Coghill, will all please rise for the invocation.
Shall we pray? O Heavenly Father, creator of the universe, who has filled the world with beauty, open our hearts to behold your gracious hand in all your works, that by rejoicing in your whole creation, we may learn to serve you with gladness of heart. Almighty God, send down upon this Senate the spirit of wisdom, charity, and justice. Fill us with creativity and steadfast purpose, that we may faithfully serve in our respective offices for the well-being of the people and to the glory of your name. Through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
Senator Jones, will you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May we have the certification of the journal, please?
I wish to certify for the correctness of the journals for the 54th, 55th, 56th, legislative days and Senate Supplement Number 31.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 54, 55, and 56th legislative day and Senate Supplement Number 31 be approved as certified.
Hearing no objections, the Senate journal for the 54th, 55th, and 56th legislative days and Senate Supplement Number 31 have been approved by the State Senate. Senator Rohde.
Madam President, would you please have the Secretary note my presence in the chamber?
Madam Secretary, Senator Duncan is waving from the corner. I believe he would also like to be considered present this morning. Do we have introduction of guests, please? Senator Kelly.
Madam President, we have with us today a longtime and pioneer Alaskan from Anchorage. He was born and raised in Anchorage in 1916. There are currently four generations living there now. He started the first dairy and pasteurized milk in the state of Alaska in 1932. He had a medical degree, served with the United States Armed Forces in the South Pacific in World War II. He began the first medical clinic in Anchorage in 1948, and he purchased the Life Insurance Corporation of Alaska in 1962. Former chairman of the State Board of Health under then-Governor Greening, Dr. Asa Martin.
Senator Fisher.
Yes, thank you, Madam President. In the gallery behind us, we have three residents from the Kenai Peninsula Borough. All three are associated with Homer Electric. And first of all, I would like to introduce Leo Rode, who we know did serve in the State House. Leo. And then also we have the manager of the Soldotna office of Homer Electric, Ron Rainey. We have a board member of the HEA, Ken Lancaster.
Senator Jones.
Madam President, we have with us today two students with the COSUP program from Petersburg, Sarah Powick and Rachel Schmidt. Please stand. Welcome.
Further introduction of guests, Senator Binkley.
Thank you very much, Madam President. My pleasure to introduce quite a number of students from the Lower Kuskokwim School District here as part of the close-up program. From Newtok, we have Iris Tom. From Oscarville, Yvonne Larson. From Tuksuk Bay, Dora Moses. From Neposkiak, Philip Nikolai Jr. From Newtok, Dora Tommy. Tuksuk Bay, Xavier Tulik. From Quinhock, Jeanette Smith. From Tuntutuliak, Pavla Ivan. From Platinum, Ricky Echuk. From Quinhock, Grace Pleasant. From Quigilingok, Dennis Jimmy. And also from Quigilingok, Palmer John. And the teacher from Quigilingok, Annie Ronsey. Welcome to the Senate.
Senator Cogno.
Madam President, also from for the close-up program, it gives me pleasure in introducing three students and their teacher. From Delta Greeley, from the Delta Greeley School District, we have Kim Kinston, we have Jody Liss, we have Tessa Kaneda, is that right? And Jack Detzler, who is the teacher. Welcome to the Senate, sir.
Senator Binkley.
Thank you, Madam President. One more introduction, a very special friend of mine that has worked with me closely over the last several years, been my campaign chairman, as a matter of fact, last two elections. In the far gallery from New Napichuk, Robert Nick, who is also the chairman of the Lower Kuskokwim School District and a past president of the Alaska Association of School Boards. Please help me welcome.
Further introduction of guests. Do we have messages from the governor?
There are no messages from the governor this morning, Madam President.
Do we have messages from the House of Representatives?
Message dated March 4. Dear Madam President, the House has confirmed the appointment of Randy Welker as the legislative auditor. Message dated March 4. Dear Madam President, the House has passed the following, and it is transmitted for consideration. House Bill number 269 by Representatives Barnes and Furness by request entitled An Act Relating to Eligibility for Veterans Interest Rates for Housing Mortgage Loans.
This will be referred to the State Affairs Committee and the Finance Committee for their committee hearings.
That is all the messages from the House this morning.
Do we have communications?
There are no communications this morning, Madam President.
Do we have reports of standing committees?
The Resources Committee considered Senate Bill 192, membership of the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund Board, and a majority of the committee recommended it be replaced with committee substitute for SB 192 Resources with a new title and due pass. The report is signed by Senator Coghill, Chairman, and concurred in by Senators Eliason, Sturgiluski, Jaroff, Duncan, and Fisher. Senator Fanning signed no recommendation. The committee further attaches a zero fiscal note. Senate Bill 192 has no further referrals.
Rules Committee, please.
The Labor and Commerce Committee considered Senate Bill 391 relating to the sale of wine by wineries, and a majority of the committee recommends due pass. The report is signed by Senator Kelly, Chairman, and concurred in by Senators Eliason, Zemanski, and Euling. The committee further attaches a zero fiscal note. SB 391 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Resources Committee considered Senate Bill 397 relating to the obstruction or hindrance of lawful hunting, fishing, or trapping and reports it back as follows. Senator Fisher, Vice Chairman, and Senators Fanning and Sturgiluski signed due pass. Senators Duncan and Jaroff signed no recommendation. The committee further attaches a zero fiscal note. Senate Bill 397 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Resources Committee considered Senate Bill 398, certain reports and records concerning game animals, and reports it back as follows. Senator Fisher, Vice Chairman, signed, and Senator Fanning signed due pass. Senator Sturgiluski signed due pass if amended. Senators Duncan and Jaroff signed no recommendation. The committee further attaches a zero fiscal note. SB 398 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered Senate Bill 416, and a majority of the committee recommends due pass. The report is signed by Senator Kelly, Chairman, and Senators Euling and Fahrenkamp. Senator Eliason signed, do pass if funds available. Senator Zemanski signed, no recommendation. SB 416 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Resources Committee considered Senate Bill 443, Game Bird Farming, EFD, and reports it back as follows. Senator Fisher, Vice Chairman, signed, do pass. Senators Fanning, Eliason, and Sturgiluski signed no recommendation. The committee further attaches a zero fiscal note. SB 443 has no further referrals.
Rules Committee.
The Labor and Commerce Committee considered committee substitute for House Bill 287, Finance Amended, relating to students' entitlement to unemployment compensation credit and benefits, and a majority of the committee recommends due pass. The report is signed by Senator Kelly, Chairman, concurring Senators Ewing, Fahrenkamp, and Eliason. Committee substitute for House Bill 287, Finance Amended, has a further referral to the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee. The Rules Committee considered Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 40, Revision of Title II of the Alaska Statutes, and Committee Substitute for House Bill 356, Rules Amended, Authority of the Alaska Public Utilities Commission in connection with certain activities of the Alaska Power Authority, certain agreements among certain public utilities, and calculating power cost equalization, relating to certain meetings between the Alaska Power Authority and Public Utilities, EFD, and a majority of the committee recommends calendar. The reports are signed by Senator Eliason, Chairman, and concurred in by Senators Fakes and Jones. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 40 and Committee Substitute for House Bill 356, Rules Amended, are on today's calendar. That is all the standing committee reports this morning, Madam President.
Do we have reports of special committees?
There are no reports of special committees this morning.
Do we have introduction of Senate resolutions?
There are no resolutions for introduction this morning, Madam President.
Do we have introduction of Senate bills?
There are no Senate bills for introduction this morning, Madam President.
Brings us to the consideration of the daily calendar. Madam Secretary, will we read the first item on the calendar, please?
Committee substitute for House Bill Number 356, Rules Am, by the Rules Committee for an act entitled, an act relating to the authority of the Alaska Public Utilities Commission in connection with certain activities of the Alaska Power Authority, certain agreements among certain public utilities, and calculating power cost equalization relating to certain meetings between the Alaska Power Authority and public utilities and providing for an effective date. The Resources Committee considered this bill and recommends it be replaced with Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 356 Resources and due pass with attached letter of intent. The report was signed by Senator Coghill, Chairman, concurring Senators Fanning, Eliason, Sturgiluski, Jaroff, Duncan, and Fisher. The committee attached a negative fiscal note. The Rules Committee considered this bill and recommends calendaring. The report was signed by Senator Eliason, Chairman, concurring Senators Fakes and Jones. I have a Rules Senate Committee Substitute.
Senator Coghill.
President, I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 356 be adopted, Resources be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Hearing no objections, the Resources Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 356 has been adopted and is before the Senate.
Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 356 Resources by the Resources Committee, an act relating to the authority of the Alaska Public Utilities Commission in connection with certain activities of the Alaska Power Authority, certain agreements among certain public utilities, and calculating power cost equalization relating to certain meetings between the Alaska Power Authority and public utilities and providing for an effective date.
Are there any amendments?
I have no amendment.
Mr. Majority Leader.
I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 356 Resources be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, and place in final passage.
Hearing no objections, the Resources Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 356 is before the Senate in final passage.
Senate CS for CS for House Bill 356 Resources, an act relating the authority of the Alaska Public Utilities Commission in connection with certain activities of the Alaska Power Authority, certain agreements among public utilities, and calculating power cost equalization relating to certain meetings between the Alaska Power Authority and public utilities and providing for an effective date.
Discussion, please. Senator Coghill.
Madam President, this bill basically is a Alaska Public Utilities Commission bill. It limits their authority to review the approval of the wholesale power agreements and related agreements concerning the Bradley Lake Hydro Project. It was in Senate Bill 22 last year in its context. Of course, you know that got vetoed, and so we're back at it again to try and get the Alaska Power Authority online to be able to build that facility. The only difference between the Senate Committee Substitute and the House bill is Section 5, and we lifted it out of the bill because it wasn't really statutory language, it was really intent language from their bill, and we put that in the letter of intent in its full context. So we haven't really done anything that is contrary to what the House passed over to us. I could go into the bill that deals with the oversight of the agreement for the sale of wholesale power by the Alaska Power Utilities. The need for these changes rose as a result of the 1986 when we had the sunsetting of the Public Utility Commission that inadvertently or avertently, whichever it might be, the authority for APUC to then have an oversight over another agency of the state government, which is APA, arose out of that sunsetting clause. Section 1 of the bill amends 4205-431 by excluding from the APUC review wholesale power agreements related contracts entered into between the Alaska Power Authority and more utilities, the rail belt utilities in particularly, in October of last year. And what we're doing here is it permits the utilities to charge rates sufficient to meet the obligations under the agreement or related contracts. Meetings between the parties concerning these agreements are subject to, of course, to the open meeting law. Section 2 of the bill then requires the Alaska Public Utilities Commission to allow the utilities' rates to reflect the utilities' valid costs under the wholesale power agreement. Section 3 makes minor changes in 483090B to more precisely define what contracts are exempt from the APUC review. In other words, what we've got here is that the power authority has been given a green light to go through on the Bradley project, but in the future, there still has to be an Alaska Public Utility Commission overview. Number 4 states that the Utility Commission may not consider valid costs or kilowatt hour sales to the Department of Defense facilities when determining the level of the utility power cost equalization benefit, and this was put in not for the Bradley Lake project, but it was an APUC that the Utility Commission agreed with that has to do with the facility down in the Bristol Bay where they have their major supplier to a defense position. So I guess when the bill is a straight up or down, it's a authorization of the Alaska Power Authority to go forward with the Bradley Lake. What we want to do is we want to get it passed, and I recommend that you pass on.
Senator Cotulla.
Now, President Sun, we're all somewhat familiar with this legislation, but what became the problem with APUC review? Did they just not function, or not competent to function in this particular wholesale area? Were they second-guessing and making decisions that alternate uses be afforded to the public? What was that specific problem?
Senator Coghill.
Madam President, the real problem there is that the Alaska Public Utilities Commission has got, by statute, a lot of hoops that they have to go through. They've already gone through all of these hoops with the utilities. And what we have here is that now we're going through them with the Alaska Power Authority, and what this opens the way for the Bradley project to go forward. And if we don't pass it, why, it's going to delay Bradley for a good some time. So in other words, the public is already protected in the commission by the regulation of the individual utilities.
Senator Cotulla.
One more time. My understanding that this window of opportunity is restricted and we return to the existing statute after these two exclusions or these two, yes.
Senator Coghill.
The good senator from Matsu Valley is correct. That's correct. This is a window for Bradley and then it closes.
Further discussion?
Question.
Senator Binkley.
Thank you, Madam President. Through the chair to the chairman of Resources Committees, could you go over one more time the difference between the Senate Committee substitute and the House version? I understand that you just deleted Section 5. And now, did you also amend then the letter of intent that came over from the House that had that same language in it?
Senator Coghill.
Madam President, that's correct. We put the Section 5 into our letter of intent, Senator Binkley. And it's the bottom paragraph of the letter of intent coming from the Resources Committee.
Senator Binkley.
Madam President, through the chair, to the chairman of the Resources Committee, so do I understand that there was no letter of intent from the House, or is this a separate letter of intent from the Senate?
Senator Lyson.
President, in letter of intent, the first portion, the first paragraph of letter of intent came from the House, and the second portion of letter of intent came out of the bill into this letter.
Further discussion on the bill. If it is so desired, prior to passage of the bill, we do need a motion on the letter of intent. We're into discussion. Senator Fanning.
Could we have a brief at ease, Madam President?
Senate will stand at ease without objection. Senate will come to order, please. The Senate will come to order. We are in third reading on House Bill 356, Resources Committee Substitute. We are under discussion. We have letters of intent before us. Nothing has been moved on final passage of this bill. Senator Coghill.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate letter of intent and for to Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 356, Resources, be adopted, and that the letter of intent passed over from the House letter of intent, be also adopted. Ask unanimous consent.
Senator Curtula.
I think we should adopt them separately.
Yes, sir. You have to make one motion at a time, sir, if that will meet your objectives. You've made a motion on the Senate letter of intent. Would you make that motion again, sir, on the Senate letter of intent?
Madam President, I move to ask unanimous consent. The letter of intent committee, the Senate letter of intent for Senate committee substitute for committee substitute for House Bill 356, Resources, be adopted.
Hearing no objections, the Resources Committee substitute letter of intent has been adopted. Senator Coghill.
Madam President, now I move and ask unanimous consent that the House letter of intent that came over from the House for committee substitute for 356. Attached to Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 356, Resources, be adopted.
Okay. Senator Curtula is objecting. Is there a discussion? Senator Curtula.
What are we specifically doing now here in the House letter of intent, Mr. President?
Senator Coghill.
Madam President. What we're doing in the House letter of intent, if you get down to the crux of it, is that they are saying here that the formula and the cost allocations that are being established in the agreements, in the wheeling agreements and the power agreements, would be beyond the authority of the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. But the specific cost items to the allocation under the formula, however, would be subject to APUC review. In other words, the individual allocations in the formula. Thus, for example, and it says right in there, thus, for example, the percentage of a utility's administrative cost attributable to the operating and maintenance expense of the wheeling could be reviewed. But once those costs have been validated by Alaska Public Utility Commission, the method of allocation among the utilities as specified by the formula in the contract, which the contracts have already been established, and that's already part of the agreement, would be exempt from APUC-mandated changes. In other words, there's a certain portion of this agreement that you can reach, and there's a certain portion that you can't reach by going through Alaska Public Utilities Commission. APA has already signed those agreements. The utilities, the seven utilities, have already signed the agreements. It's already been done. It's set. And it's set also in the financing scheme. So what we're doing here is we're saying that only those specific cost items to be allocated under the formula would be subject to the Public Utility Commission review.
Senator Curtula.
The formula, then, is what we're speaking to, because there would be changes from time to time, administrative costs, but that formula then would be subject to change depending on the costs of administrative and so on. But the formula would remain the same, but just the figures, the amounts could change, would change.
That's right, Madam President. They would change from time to time as we go down the cost of the project, of the Bradley Lake project.
Senator Josephson.
My understanding, Madam President, then, is that the commission would have the opportunity to look at numbers. They could look at the mathematics and the numbers and the supporting data for the numbers. They could not look at the theory or formula of allocation. Is that correct?
Senator Coghill.
Madam President, that's basically correct. We're not trying to take any of the consumer protection overview away from the Alaska Public Utility Commission, but it's already established by the wheeling agreements, by the agreements that have already been made between APA and the utility and the users. So we need to go forward with that structure. And I guess this letter of intent was just to kind of show that there were some avenues in there that there needed to be reviewed.
Senator Josephson.
I just ask if there's a way to do this procedurally, that when this measure comes back to the House, that the House act on our letter of intent as we acted on theirs, and somehow that be called to their attention, to make a complete package of it.
It will go into the message, sir. They will have both of them in their message, and they will be concurring on both of them or not concurring on both of them. So further discussion on the letter of intent. There was an objection. Unless the objection has been withdrawn, we need to vote on the House letter of intent, which is the CS for House Bill 356 rules amended. Do you remove your objection, sir? Is there further objection? The House letter of intent dated 2/15/88 by Sund has been adopted. Is there further discussion on House Bill 356 resources? Are members prepared to vote?
Right.
Question has been called. The question being, shall the Resources Committee substitute for Committee substitute for House Bill 356 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Madam Secretary may lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change her or his vote?
I'll change my vote.
Senator Krutula wishes to change his vote. Does any other member? Senator Hensley? Madam Secretary may record the vote. And thus the Resources Committee substitute for Committee substitute for House Bill 356 has passed the Senate by a vote of 17 yeas, 3 nays, no one absent. Mr. Majority Leader.
I move and ask unanimous consent that the vote on Senate Committee substitute for Committee substitute for House Bill 356 resources be considered the vote on effective date clause.
Hearing no objections, the final passage of Committee substitute for Committee substitute for House Bill 356 resources will be considered the roll call vote on final passage of the effective date clause. Senator Krutula.
I notice my intent to reconsider my vote on the next legislative on House Bill 356.
Notice of reconsideration has been given. Senator Coghill.
I was rising for the same motion. The good senator from Massachusetts beat me to it.
Next item on the calendar, please. Senator Zara.
Thank you, Madam President. May we revert to introduction of guests?
Hearing no objection, Senator, we'll revert to introduction of guests. Senator Zara.
Thank you, Madam President. In the far gallery, I see we have I have two constituents from the Lake and Penn School District. They are members of the school board. And from the community of Chignik Lake, I'd like to introduce Lola Lind. And with her, from the community of New Halen, Wasi Baluta. Welcome to Senate.
Further introduction of guests? Madam Secretary, we read the next item on the calendar, please.
Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 40 by Senator Halford relating to the revision of Title II of the Alaska Statutes. The Transportation Committee considered this resolution and recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 40, Transportation, same title and due pass. The report was signed by Senator Jones, Chairman, concurring. Senators Kelly, Abood, Coghill, and Fahrenkamp. Fiscal note attached. Finance Committee considered this bill, and majority of the committee recommends the Transportation Committee substitute do pass. The report was signed by Senator Halford, Chairman, Co-Chairman, concurring. Senators Duncan, Zaroff, Ewing, and Binkley. New zero fiscal note attached. The Rules Committee considered this resolution and recommends calendar. The report was signed by Senator Elias and Chairman, concurring. Senators Fakes and Jones. I have a committee substitute.
Senator Jones.
I move the committee substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 40, Transportation, be adopted in lieu of the original resolution.
Hearing no objections, the Transportation Committee substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 40 has been adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Committee substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 40, Transportation, by the Transportation Committee, relating to the revision of Title II of the Alaska Statutes.
Discussion. Senator Halford.
Madam President, the resolution is self-explanatory, but just suffice it to say that the transportation, particularly in air, regulations in law of the state have come from territorial regulation from 1929, 1937, and 1949. There have not been major revisions with the exception of the Air Commerce Act and the repeal of the Air Commerce Act by the voters in 1983. This request was initially made by the revisor statute. It appears that with the interest in aviation and some of the major safety questions that are out there, that this is a legitimate request. It would ask the Code Revision Commission to look into the Aeronautics Act of the State of Alaska, and $14,000 will be requested through Legislative Affairs budget for that purpose.
Further discussion?
Question.
Hearing no further discussion, the question's been called. The question, Senator Fahrenkamp, you're seeking the floor.
At ease.
Senate will stand at ease. Senate will come to order. We have before us for discussion the Transportation Committee substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 40. Is there discussion? Question has been called. The question being, shall the Transportation Committee substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 40 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Does any senator fail to vote? Madam Secretary may lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change her or his vote? Madam Secretary may record the vote. And thus, the Transportation Committee substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 40 is passed the Senate by a vote of 20 yeas. Next item on the calendar, Madam Secretary.
In memoriam, Jerome Trigg by Senators Hensley, Strzelczewski, Zaroff, and Binkley.
Discussion. Discussion on the citation. Senator Eliason.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the citation in memoriam to Jerome Trigg be approved.
Hearing no objections, the citation on today's calendar has been approved. Unfinished business. Senator Petula.
President, the Senate brought to my attention there is a time frame of about a week on Senate Bill, House Bill 356. There may be somebody else that wishes to object, but I would move that my reconsideration on House Bill 356 be taken up at this time. I'm not trying to preempt any other person who might have a problem.
Hearing no objections, the reconsideration on House Bill 356 will be brought up before the Senate at this time.
Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 356, Resources, an act relating to the authority of the Alaska Public Utilities Commission in connection with certain activities of the Alaska Power Authority, certain agreements among certain public utilities, and calculating power cost equalization relating to certain meetings between the Alaska Power Authority and public utilities, and providing for an effective date before the Senate on reconsideration.
Senator Curtula.
President, there are from time to time over the past years and in the future years, I'm sure, in the private and public interests, desire to go around the Public Service Commission for various, again, public and private purposes. This is a fast-tracking around Public Service Commission. I just want to state for the record, however, as did the chairman of the Resources Committee, in perhaps a different way, but nonetheless stated that this program has gone through a number of public hearings, has met and performed along the way to the satisfaction, I believe, of the legislative body and members of the commission. It's just that they don't have the time to go through this exercise a second time. And I suspect, again, that any time that there's an attempt for some other future program to go around Public Service Commission, at the very least, they should have performed in the same way as this particular effort has, and that is go through the public purpose and hearing process and so on. So it's a well-known subject with well-known alternatives that has a broad endorsement.
Further discussion? Senator Hensley.
Madam President, was it the decision of the Resources Committee not to include the small utility exemption in this particular piece of legislation? I believe last year they were tied together.
Senator Coggio.
Madam President, that is correct. That is taken up in a subject under another bill.
Further discussion?
Question
has been called. The question being, shall the Resources Committee substitute for Committee substitute for House Bill 356 pass the Senate on reconsideration? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Madam Secretary, you may lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change her or his vote? Madam Secretary, you may record the vote. And thus, the Resources Committee substitute for House Bill 356 has passed the Senate on reconsideration by a vote of 16 yeas, 4 nays. Mr. Majority Leader.
I move and ask unanimous consent that the vote on the passage of the Senate Committee substitute for House Bill 356 resources be considered a vote on effective date clause.
Hearing no objections, the final passage vote on Committee substitute for House Bill 356 resources will be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause. Unfinished business. Unfinished business. Senator Fahrenkamp.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that I be excused and the Senate not subject to call March 26th through the 27th on personal business, April 7th through the 10th on government business, and April 28th, 29th, and 30th on government business.
Hearing no objection, Senator, you are excused from the call of the Senate on those four dates. Senator Fisher?
Yes, I move and ask unanimous consent that I be excused from the call of the Senate on April 18th through 22nd on state business.
Without objection, Senator, you are excused from the call of the Senate on April 18th through 22nd on state business. That's Monday through Friday. Further unfinished business. Announcements. Senator Jones.
Madam President, I'd like to announce the Joint Economic Recovery Committee, that's House and Senate, will meet at 5 o'clock in the Senate Finance Room. We're going to hear from Dr. Ryan Amaker, economist from Clemson University. Right after his address, we'll adjourn, and the Senate Economic Recovery Committee will meet. And we will hear from Anthony Gumbiner, chairman of the Hallwood Group. Thank you.
Further announcements. Senator Ewing.
Thank you, Madam President. Tomorrow we'll have a special Senate International Trade meeting regarding an act relating to tourism promotion and development, which is Senate Bill 478. Also, the Senate Subcommittee on Revenue will meet on Wednesday at 7:15 in the Brutrovich Room.
Further announcements.
I'm sorry, Madam President.
Senator Ewing.
I'm sorry, I didn't mention it's tomorrow from 3:30 to 5 on the Senate International Trade Committee.
Senator Coghill.
Madam President, today the Senate Resources Committee joins with the Senate Oil and Gas Committee in an overview on utilization and development incentives. We thought that Leon Hess was going to be here and join us. Cliff Berglund, independent, is down from Fairbanks. It's going to be a very interesting 2 hours, and I would suggest that anybody that has time on their hands that they come and join us, because it's going to be a very interesting program. And that's today at the Brutrovich Room from 1:30 until 3:30. On March the 9th, the long-awaited D-Day of 191 will take place, up or down, one way or the other, and Senate Bill 482, if anybody wants to know what 191 is, it's on guides and outfitters. And then Senate Bill 482, farming of aqua plants and animals, prohibiting aqua farming of fish, fin fish, and saltwater. We'll start that process, and then we're going to stay on that, and we're going to do a teleconference on it the following Friday.
Senator Alford.
Thank you, Madam President. Tomorrow morning at 8:30, Senate Finance will be taking up Senate Bill 415, making a special appropriation to the Alaska court system, Senate Bill 42, an act relating to early retirement programs, Senate Bill 61, relating to rights of injured state employees, Senate Bill 135, an act limiting recruitment of employees, school administrators, and teachers. We have a number of other bills that we're also scheduling through the week to try and move some bills out, and we'll, if we get through the bills on Tuesday's calendar, we'll take up bills previously scheduled, and the same for Wednesday and on.
Senator Elias.
Madam President, Rules Committee will meet this afternoon at 1:15. We'll be taking up SB 351, Arbitration of Medical Malpractice Claims, Senate Bill 399, Inclusion of Fingerprint Information in Criminal Justice Information System, Senate Bill 443, Game Bird Farming, Senate Bill 192, Membership of the Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund Board, at 1:15 in the Belts Room.
Delightful. Senator Zara.
Thank you, Madam President. Tomorrow morning at 7:30, the Subcommittee on Administration will meet, I think, in either the Belts Room or the Butrovich Room, depending on when we get it. It's been difficult. I'm sorry to give short notice, but it's been difficult to try to find the time there to get these subcommittee meetings out of the way, but this seems to be the only time there that we can really do it in a short fashion, and I don't have a list of the topics that we're going to be covering, but it should be interesting.
Further announcement. Senator
The Senate Pest Committee will be meeting today. We have three items on the agenda, and they are posted.
Further announcements. Special orders. Senator Abood, did you have announcements?
State Affairs will meet this afternoon at 1:30.
Further announcements. Special order. Senator Sturgiluski, you're seeking the floor.
Fine. I move and ask unanimous consent that I be asked to speak very briefly on a matter dealing with the Department of Fish and Game.
Without objection, Senator, you do have the privilege of the floor.
Fine.
To speak
Thank
on the Department
you very
of Fish
much.
And Game.
About, well, in December, we were a number of people, and I'm sure the rest of this body, asked for comments by Fish and Game on the draft, the governor's fisheries policy and development strategy. I suggested in a response that in the development of a cohesive approach to the management that we would have to take in the whole issue of sport fishing and the issue of subsistence. I stated that commercial sport and subsistence fisheries are too interrelated and that none of them can be managed in isolation of the other, the whole rehabilitation program, the whole management scheme. Well, it took 85 days or 3 months, just short of 3 months, to get a response. And Collinsworth said, or Commissioner Collinsworth said, that while sport and fisheries are important, that basically they're inappropriate for what he was doing with the commercial fisheries. And I just think it's crazy, at the best, not to include sport fisheries and not to include subsistence in the whole thing. There's economic value to both of those. And I don't know how we go about changing where the commissioner's headed, but I think he's all wet on this one.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Cotulla.
Moon asking out consent to have a privilege of the floor on the same subject.
Without objection, Senator, you do have the privilege
of the
floor.
The previous speaker woke me up here on this subject. For several days, about 2 weeks now, I've been contacting Fish and Game about the possibility of Trail Lakes Hatchery, which does all the work for the sports fishing throughout the Mat-Su and down in the Kenai that I know of, and it doesn't fit in my mind the aquaculture programs of the state, which are pretty much strictly related to commercial fishing, although there's an incidental sports fishery value there. And supportive as I've been, written three laws on aquaculture programs, put in the original funding for the facility in the Prince William Sound, I still don't believe that Trail Lakes, which does the sports fishery work, along with some commercial fishery work, ought to be taken over by an aquaculture program. And there is no funding in the budget to continue the Trail Lakes facility except at a housekeeping maintenance level. I believe that there's about $300,000 needed in there, and I frankly think there will be some problems of the magnitude of the Kenai River if we don't continue the sports fishery facility in the Trail Lakes Hatchery. That's it's a big tom-tom down there. I've heard from people in Cooper Landing, Moose Pass, and Seward that I never hear from. very good citizens that are concerned, but they're very concerned that this Trail Lakes Hatchery, which also has a real tourist opportunity, it's a very attractive building, very simple. People go in and out of there, are demonstrated. It has a real lot of values. Anyway, they're very concerned that this hatchery be transferred over to an aquaculture program, when in fact it has a very definite responsibility now to the sports fishing interests as well as the commercial fishing program. And I think that $300,000 ought to remain in, whomever I'm speaking to on the Finance Committee. I hope they will look at it.
Senator Hensley.
Madam President, I would ask, move and ask unanimous consent that I be permitted to speak about local hire.
Without objection, Senator, you do have the privilege of the floor to speak on local hire. Senator Hensley.
Madam President, the Superior Court recently decided that the local hire law, especially the distressed economic zone portion of the law, was unconstitutional. Madam President, that is a terrible blow for the people in the area that I come from. I think it's also a blow for other working people of the state. The contractor will be starting up his project again in 2 to 3 weeks. Madam President, that contractor is now free to hire willy-nilly people from anywhere in Alaska and perhaps outside the state. I don't know what their intentions are, but I do know that it has taken us many years to reach this point where there was some hope for gainful employment in that area. We have had to go to Congress to get a right-of-way. We've had to fight a border battle. We've had to form a borough. We have had to fight strenuously to secure funding to build a road in the port to help diversify the state's economy. And now, this judge, in the warmth and comfort of his robes in an ivory tower, has said that, basically, that what the people need out there in rural Alaska is more welfare. Even if there are people that are experienced, who have the qualifications for the employment in that area, he's basically saying that the contractor can ignore them, and he would be within his legal right to do so, and I think that's wrong. There has got to be something that the state could do to ensure that if state funds are being spent right in your backyard, that if you qualify to work, you should have access to work. And it seems to me that there's something that can be done to help with that. I do not believe that the people in our area want welfare. That's why we have worked so hard to get a private operation going that will create employment that would not be subject to the ups and downs of public spending. And I believe he's got to be wrong, and I would urge that the state administration seek a stay on that decision, so at least in the startup of this project that we'd have an opportunity to put people to work. The way the regulations were being implemented were not onerous. It was only in certain categories of work that there was a requirement for 50% local hire. And if we didn't have the experienced people, they were free within a matter of hours to find those people elsewhere in the state. Madam President, I hope that the state will appeal this decision and at least have the state Supreme Court to make its pronouncements. The distressed zone, I don't believe, was onerous on the contractor. And it was based on certain social indices that would show that if there is not local hire in that particular zone, and if there hasn't been, that it would be permissible to have half the people work in these certain key jobs. And Madam President, if we don't resolve this problem, this $3.2 million that we've had to spread throughout my district in terms of the jobs bill does not do anything. We have several other contracts that are to be let, and I'm hoping that if the Supreme Court sees fit, that it finds this law constitutional. Thank you.
Senator Josephson.
Privilege of the floor to speak on the same subject, Madam President.
Without objection, Senator, you do have the privilege of the floor to speak on the same subject.
Thank you, Madam President. I want to associate myself with the remarks of the Senator from Kotzebue and just cover a few critical points about the judge's decision. I'll try to be as brief as possible. First of all, the Superior Court did not conduct an evidentiary hearing. It never heard testimony about the economy in the Kotzebue area, the level of unemployment, or any other problems of workers in that area. And in fact, at page 13 of his opinion, Judge Serdaily noted that evidentiary hearings were held in other cases, the Robison versus Francis case. He noted that the absence of evidence caused the Supreme Court of the United States to remand for trial a case which arose in New Jersey involving a municipal ordinance which gave preference to municipal residents, and that in another federal case, the limited nature of the evidentiary record, according to the judge's own footnote, was held to be dispositive. And even with those authorities, he declined to have an evidentiary hearing where the state would have had, and Nana would have had an opportunity to explain the reasons for the statute and how it would be applied in the particular project in question. And as Senator Hensley said, the judge's rationale for his decision, after he says that the regional preference law, which you wrote, Madam President, I think that it's been a misunderstanding in some people's minds as to who is the author of this effort, but he recognized first that this law was more narrowly drafted than the predecessors. He said the law limits the numbers of people eligible, the regions that would benefit, the types of jobs available, the types of projects subject to the preference, and the length of time the preference will apply. But after saying all that, he said that the reason for concluding that the law was unconstitutional was this. He says, clearly, narrower or less restrictive means could have been adapted to achieve the goal of providing public assistance to economically hard-hit communities in this state. We're not talking about public assistance. We're talking about, and Senator Hensley put it well in a statement he made, we're talking about jobs and self-esteem and self-sufficiency. And the Superior Court said the legislature, and I'm quoting from the opinion, instead of passing this law, what we could have done, because we're interested in anybody's suggestions as to alternatives, and sometimes I wish the people with alternatives in mind would run for the legislature so they could make a great contribution here. He said the legislature could probably have provided job training and educational programs. That's fine and dandy, and we do some of that. Low-cost housing, medical and food supplies to residents of economically depressed zones, special assistance grants to needy communities, and publicly subsidized transportation for residents of hard-hit areas to training institutions or employment opportunities. Now, that is a bizarre statement of what our alternatives were as alternative to finding jobs for people who don't have jobs. And I believe that an evidentiary hearing, if he'd held one, would have shown the judge that this list of remedies, while not objectionable and may be desirable, does not solve the problem of chronic underemployment in economically depressed zones. Senator Hensley, in his statement, said the court's reasoning ignored the importance of job holding as a source of self-esteem. The court demonstrated its ignorance and insensitivity to the people of rural Alaska and ignored the principle that a state legislature should have leeway in analyzing local conditions and prescribing remedies. In the real world, I believe, if an evidentiary hearing had been held, the court would have learned that low-cost housing, medical and food supplies, special assistance grants, and publicly subsidized transportation are not the issue. The real issue is that this legislature made available millions of dollars motivated in part by our wish to promote employment of area residents. The real issue was that this project is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for on-the-job training and experience that could help workers throughout their careers. The real issue is an attempt to stop long-standing patterns of discrimination. The interesting, without going on too much with this, I also want to say that there's an irony here. You know, when we face the invalidity or a supposed invalidity in court decisions of prior local hire laws, what was the instruction we got from courts? The instruction was that we can't just say Alaska workers have a preference and non-Alaskans don't. They said if you want to have a constitutional law, you got to distinguish within Alaska between those communities that have high rates of unemployment and those communities that do not. And so we, being good men and women, followed that guidance from the court system. And now the court says it was because we followed that judicial guidance that the new statute is unconstitutional. That is a catch-22, Madam President, for judges to tell us that we must draw distinctions between our people in order to have a local higher law that can be upheld, and then to say after we do that, that our enactment is unconstitutional because we drew those distinctions. This morning, Governor Cooper said that we should perhaps stop chasing the rabbit of local hire. I disagree. He said that the solution is to require oil companies to disclose the residency of their employees. That has nothing to do with Red Dog and the transportation system and Cominco. I don't know why that statement is even made. I hope that we do follow Senator Hensley's advice, seek an appeal, seek a stay. I believe, as the Attorney General said, that we had a good Deputy Attorney General Lawrence, and that we have a good chance on this measure, and I think we owe it to our rural residents to keep working on it. Thank you, Madam President.
Further special orders. Senator Lassen.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate stand in adjournment until 11 a.m. Tuesday, March 8, 1988.
Without objection, the Senate is adjourned until 11 a.m. Tuesday, March 8.
Tomorrow, 11:30.